Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Buffer Podcast. It's good to be with you. This podcast is dropping on the last day of April, which is crazy to think about in the year, really the year and a half that we've been living and navigating a pandemic together. My name is Tony Tone.
I'm Joel Krausar.
And Joe, we have a special guest with us today, which is exciting.
Yes, we have our resident movie critic with the Discover Muscatine newspaper, and a longtime friend, not his maiden voyage on this podcast, but maiden voyage on the new version of the podcast. Our friend Ben Nitzel joins us. Ben, welcome. We're all in our bunkers on Zoom, and this is how we do this now.
Yeah, well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It was great to hear your podcast get back into a regular circulation, and it's great to be back. So thanks for having me on.
I think one of the things that I enjoy about Ben's movie reviews, again, it, locally for us, it's in the Discover Muscatine newspaper, is that you try to see a variety of movies. And I feel like I know you well enough to kind of know what you like, but you really have made a conscious effort, even during a pandemic, to make sure that your reviews are not just all superheroes or all comedies. Talk about that for a minute. I mean, do you really just kind of take a look at, first of all, it's been different with what's getting released and what's not, but how has your process had to change over the last 18 months?
Yeah, so, I do try to be as adventurous as possible, right? As much variety as possible. I realize we got a lot of different people that are readers of our publication. And so, I don't want to just write reviews that only I would watch. That being said, one of the sort of founding things for me is, this is a side gig. This is mostly a glorified hobby. And so I take time away from my family to go to the movies. It's something I enjoy. It's one of my, free time things. And so I'm not going to see a movie I absolutely don't want to see. You're not going to get a review of the new Saw film, unfortunately. But within that, like, I've got pretty wide, diverse tastes, I feel like. And so, if I can throw a kid's movie in, if I can throw a superhero movie in, if I can find a drama, if I can find a period piece, I try to do those kind of things as much as possible. And, during the pandemic, I was a little concerned at first if I was going to have to stop doing reviews or what it was going to be, especially you think back to March and people weren't going outside. We didn't know how serious things were going to be. And so obviously a lot of the streaming, platforms have put movies on, whether they've released movies early or whether they've co-released them with the theaters, whether it's just been, obviously one of the real big changes in the industry has been how many of these streaming services have created their own films, and really some of the quality of some of those films have really stepped up. Some of the actors that in those films have really stepped up, who's in it. And, it's not like, hey, wasn't that like one of the co-stars of some Disney show 14 years ago, nobody remembers. These are big time actors. And so that's helped out quite a bit, being able to have access to those different things. Still trying to use my column to promote that we've got this wonderful theater in town. And so, go buy popcorn, go buy concessions. People don't realize that that's really how they make their money. They really don't make money off ticket sales. That money goes to Hollywood. And so, we've been really fortunate because it's such a gem here in town. And so I think they've been really blessed to have a lot of Muscatine residents show up and buy concessions, even if they weren't going to movies. And so, you can sit there and watch a brand new release from Netflix or, watch a release that's coming out on HBO Max and the theater at the same time and still feel like you're patronizing your local theater and making it, we get and we're even approaching that time net right now, right? But we get sort of out of this thing, that place is still around. There's still a place to go see the big screen without a 45-minute drive to get there.
And I was going to say, it seems like we've all seen Mortal Kombat, but I believe out of the three of us, you are the only one that saw the new Mortal Kombat on the big screen. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Well, I don't know. Yes, it sounds like it. I definitely did see it on the big screen. That's right.
Joe, I know that, that's something that you saw, that I saw, came out last week. There's been so many interesting, and that's not what the subject of today's Buffer Podcast is about, by the way, but it definitely came out last week and there was a lot of nostalgia around it. I don't know what people's expectations were. I think the one in the 90s was really enjoyable. And then we kind of didn't, did they make another? They made a couple other ones, but then there was a lot of fan.
Yes, they made multiple Mortal Kombat movies, in my understanding. The first one, I vividly remember seeing it in Council Bluffs, Iowa, with my cousins. We were back visiting Western Iowa family, and it seemed like most important movies I saw from between like 1988 and 1996 I saw at the Mall of the Bluffs in Council Bluffs, Iowa. I remember seeing Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade there. I remember seeing one Back to the Future 2, I believe, and Back to the Future 3, maybe even. It always seemed like we were back visiting family when those movies came out. So Mortal Kombat, super, super important, I think, as far as I think I was 12 when it came out. But the video game, now, Ben, I don't know what it was like, because you're just a few years older than me. Like, it was very underground that we got to play the video game. I remember on Sega Genesis, a couple of my friends having it, and none of us telling, like, each other's parents that the other kids, like, had it, so it was a sleepover, because I know that some parents, my parents included, weren't too keen on the flawless victories and the finishing moves of the video game. And so it wasn't, I'm sure they assumed we were playing it, but I just remember it being very covert to play the game. And then this PG-13 movie comes out and was kind of underwhelming. I remember liking it a lot. I remember that mortal, the guttural scream at the beginning, going right into the techno music. This is the original from, what was it, 95? Is that when it came out? 94, 95?
Yeah, 95.
And then, so I was 14. And then I also remember, but then this version being so more just, let's just make this thing rated R. Let's have, you know, people's hearts get torn out of people's chests. Let's have language. Let's have Sub-Zero being like one of the greatest like villains I've ever seen in any kind of an action movie or martial arts movie. Now, one of my father's guilty pleasures, not to step on guilty pleasures down the road, was the old Kung Fu movies on like public access. We would watch those as kids. And so having some of those aspects in these movies makes them very fun for me.
Yeah. And I think you just go into it and you're going to have fun, and it's a popcorn movie. I think Ben would agree. It's, you know, you're not going there to see an Academy Award winning film. You're going there have fun, to enjoy some action.
The actor who played Kano made a case for himself. He was hilarious.
It doesn't seem, universally, it seems like everyone enjoyed his performance. Ben, did you find yourself on Team Kano?
Oh, yeah, he was hilarious. But, I mean, I'm probably, like, actually, I think most Americans are sort of predisposed to, like, Australians and or New Zealanders. I think he's Australian. But, you know, just the accent, the way that they talk, the things that they say to each other. He was great. Great lines. Was you know, I assume most of it was well-written. But delivered well. He was very enjoyable. Certainly much more memorable and better than he was in the original 95. And yeah, I mean, I think, listen, you hit the nail on the head. Like, this is a movie where you know exactly what you're going to get, and that's what they deliver to you. And that's the point, right? The special effects are phenomenal. A lot of the kung fu fighting is fun. The story is pretty weak at times, but, you know, it's based on a video game. And so I was pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed myself just as I did back in 95. 95 certainly gets the win for the better theme music. I mean, that techno song, Mortal Kombat, is vastly underrated. I mean, I don't know that there's a better lifting song that doesn't involve guitars than that Mortal Kombat techno song. So I enjoyed going back and listening to that a few times to get pumped up before I went and saw it in the theater. So it's very entertaining, but again, that's what it's supposed to be. And so I appreciate that, right? Sometimes there's a simplicity to movies when you know what they're supposed to give you, and they deliver on that promise. They don't try to get too creative. They don't try to get too out there. And so I thought it was enjoyable, and I would recommend. And it's also, listen, it's one of those movies, you already know what you think of it going in, right? If you want to see it, you're going to enjoy yourself. If you don't want to see it, there's nothing about this film that's going to be a redeeming value to someone that's on the fence about seeing Mortal Kombat. Just move on and do something else.
It's definitely not a date night movie, I would say. It's more of a go with your friends. And again, you know, just...
Are you saying your wife's not your friend? Is that what you're trying to say, Tony? Or
I'm saying that my wife absolutely would not want to see Mortal Kombat. If I still haven't watched The Notebook, there's no way that she's going to see Mortal Kombat. But it is nice to have a Mortal Kombat and the other films, and especially within the HBO Warner Brothers canon, that are getting same day releases in the theaters and online. Something else that I just want to mention, because Ben is a Marvel fan and is a superhero fan, is how impressed, and I don't want to spoil it because I know Ben hasn't finished Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but I'll be honest, you know, I watched WandaVision on Disney Plus, and I enjoyed it more than I thought I would have, right? I didn't know what to expect. Admittedly, I'm not the biggest Marvel fan. I like Marvel just fine, but Falcon and the Winter Soldier is fantastic, and it's only 6 episodes, and I was left wanting more. You kind of can have an idea as far as where things are heading within episodes 5 and 6, but I just want to get reaction from you, Ben. You're through episode 4, it sounds like. Is it what you were expecting? I don't know if anybody, and I don't know if this is in like the Marvel comic universe where Bucky and Falcon are friends or kind of forced to be friends or their circumstances lead them together, but they're really great together. Like those actors, they do a fantastic job. And I don't even really know like what's coming. I know that there's a couple movies lined up, but what's your feeling 4 episodes in on Falcon and Winter Soldier?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy it, and I feel bad because I do gush a lot on the Marvel movies, and I like DC just fine. Batman's in my top 3 favorite superheroes of all time. You know, I hate Superman, but other than that, I love those guys. So, but I feel like I gush on Marvel probably too much. But this series does, it's just such a good, you know, personification of what Marvel does well, right? One part of it is they find an outlet here to give you 2 characters you don't care about for the most part in the series, and to explore those guys and get it to a point where like you're like, oh, I really like these guys. You know, the Falcon is a dumb, like I love Anthony Mackie as an actor, but the Falcon's kind of a dumb character. I mean, the guy's got bird wings, he flies around, he's got goggles, he shoots some pistols. But I mean, because of this show, they take 2 minor characters that are kind of throwaway characters on an Avengers movie, and now you're invested in these guys and you'll see it. The other thing they do, and I think this has been the smartest thing that Marvel has done. Well, they've done 2 smart things, right? One is they've linked all this stuff together, which is something that DC has struggled with. So, you know, you're going back to movies that you've been watching for almost 15 years now, and they're not quite that long, sorry, but about 12 years, and they're all linked together. There's pieces throughout. Super smart, ties you in. It's like a series you can't get away with. And then the other thing is they create different types of shows, right? When you go and watch the movies, it's not just a superhero movie where there's some, you know, threat where the world's going to blow up. And this is a buddy cop show, right? You've got kind of the aloof, like out of it, you know, Winter Soldier, who's kind of antisocial, doesn't really go around. Then you've got, you know, kind of is like hard on his luck, you know, Falcon, who kind of knows the way the world is and should have a lot more fame and fortune than he does, and he simply doesn't. Like, this is a buddy cop movie, or a buddy cop show, I should say, right? And you look at these different movies that they put out, and it's like, you know, so Thor the Dark World is like a sci-fi fantasy movie, and you look at Ant-Man was like a heist movie. It's like they take these different genres and then they put superheroes into them. And what that means is you can watch this series or this movie it's the 13th or 14th one you've watched or whatever it ends up being, and it feels fresh because the conventions they're using are ripped from another genre. And I just think that's so smart that you're like, oh, this is great. Like, this is totally different, but yet it still works.
Yeah, I mean,
totally agree.
It's and to put it into a procedural like TV show format too, I think is smart, because it's no different than like your Chicago PD or when, you know, one of these, you know, shows that you see on NBC on a Wednesday night, the hour long 42 mm-hmm. minute it's basically that, just with the freedom of kind of the cinematic budget and the Marvel budget. They've got obviously a better special effects budget. The opening episode with that flying through helicopters scene, it's like, wow, they're all in on, like you said, kind of a dumb character is the Falcon, but as far as, you know, he doesn't have superpowers, he's, you know, he's just mechanically enhanced. But the whole I like how they've Wyatt Russell as, you know, US agent or the new Cap, if you will, he's phenomenal in this whole series. Again, I know we're not spoiling it, but he is just I didn't realize how much he looked like his dad until a couple of these scenes. It's like, holy crap, this is like looking at a young Kurt Russell And he's got chops. He's not just the quarterback frat guy from 22 Jump Street anymore. He's a real actor that I just had never seen him in this kind of a featured role.
And it's nice. You know, you do a good job when the internet's so mad at your character and they can't separate you right. from the character. So that's always a good sign. So yeah, it is nice. I think the segue I'm going to make is when you talk about the Falcon, Anthony Mackie character, he is just a guy. He doesn't have superhero strength, but he really does. He's very resilient. And something that is releasing today when this podcast released on April 30th is Tom Clancy's Without Remorse. Admittedly, I can't say that I've seen all the Tom Clancy properties, or if there's, I feel like there's books and video games. You guys might be better versed than I am. I don't even know who's in this Tom Clancy Remorse, but I do appreciate a good character that doesn't have superhero abilities, that has to rely on their wit. And obviously, you know, most of these guys are in good shape and they have a lot of resources. But Joel, did you put this on the list? Is this something that you're looking forward to?
I can't wait for this. I unfortunately do need sleep, or else I would probably stay up till midnight just to watch this release. But I am the son of a Clancyphile. My dad, I think, has read every Tom Clancy book that was ever written, and I remember going to see Hunt for Red October in the theater, and just I'm in this kind of world is really fun for me to visit. Like this character, I believe, is more like a non.
Is this Michael B. Jordan?
It's Michael B. Jordan. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So you have the John Ryan character, who's that intelligence officer that Alec Baldwin played, and now John Krasinski plays on the Amazon Prime. And Harrison Ford, right. Yeah, just him.
Of course.
That guy. But this is kind of that number two character. And this is more like the operative kind of character. This is the person who has a particular set of skills, if you will, that has... just from the trailer, I haven't gone too deep into this movie because I just kind of wanted to be surprised by it. But it looks like, you know... He knows too much or is too close to something, and he needs to be eliminated, and they eliminate him, but they don't succeed. And that usually is a recipe for a lot of fun in some sort of a show.
And I'm going to say, I think when all I did was Google it and I saw Michael B. Jordan and I'm in, and I think all that, that's all it takes sometimes is when you see an actor, you don't even really have to know the plot. You can just tell like, okay, Michael B. Jordan does a lot of good work. I'll check that out. And that's how I feel with this. Is it Wrath of Man? Again, something that I didn't know anything about, is getting released on May 7th. That's in theaters only. And when you search for that, all I saw was Jason Statham. And again, I'm all in. And Post Malone's in it, apparently. And Josh Harnett and Scott Eastwood. Ben, I feel like you are a big Jason Statham fan. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, yeah. I mean, back to Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And this is a Guy Ritchie film. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
wow.
Yeah, I watched the trailer. I was fired up. I like Jason Statham a lot.
Well, in Post Malone, wasn't he in that Spencer, like the Mark Wahlberg Netflix? He played he was the guy trying to kill him in prison. So he's starting to work his way into movies here and there. So he's such a unique character, and just in how he looks, but. He definitely fits that Guy Ritchie aesthetic as far as, you know, kind of being out there appearance wise, but having some unique characteristics. That's for sure.
So we're giving you a lot of good things that we're recommending at the start of the Buffer podcast. And the last thing, two things, I guess, is on May 7th, Monster drops on Netflix. Joel, do you have any background on that? Because I am not familiar with Monster.
So I just saw that it was coming, and it's got Jennifer Hudson in it, and it's not a musical. Okay. I'm 99.999% sure it's not a musical, which I know is a key component for you, at least, Tony, that it's not a musical. But it looks like it's kind of a courtroom drama, and I didn't do a deep dive on it. It just looked like that was the next big thing that Netflix had coming down in the next few weeks. So that's why I put it on the list. Looks like tackling some pretty important issues regarding race and maybe the justice system based off. The trailer I found was kind of from a bootleg site that I didn't really feel like staying on. So I
gotcha.
I just log on to Netflix and watch the actual trailer. So
looks like it's in an adaptation of a book starring Calvin Harrison. So this is definitely a dramatic film, and it's out May 7th. The last thing that I want to mention is just something on HBO Max that my wife was watching that I kind of got into. And I like when HBO Max and some of these other, you know, streaming services, content providers, whatever, when they'll have a new series and rather than just drop it all at once, they'll make you wait. Not that I love that, but I can appreciate the weekly release. So
I hate it.
Kate Winslet, Mayor of Easttown?
Yeah, her name
Mayor
is
of
Mayor
of Easttown on HBO Max. Two episodes so far. Very good. I know that sometimes it's hard to appreciate a drama when you're living in a pandemic, but let me just tell you, Kate Winslet, Evan Peters, Guy Pearce. So again, killer cast. Guy Pearce is great. Kate Winslet is awesome. Ben, where do you stand? Because Ben and I differ on, Ben's not going to go see like The Conjuring 3. He's not a big horror guy, but where do you live in the drama world? Is there enough time in your day to get into dramas or series like Mayor of Easttown?
It just depends. Here's the honest, this is kind of the dirty truth about me. I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't watch a lot of series. I'll watch them occasionally. I'll find a series that'll take me a while to claw through. But I don't, so I would be open to it. One of the reasons I think I tend to enjoy movies is because I have a pretty hectic lifestyle. I'm able to go to the movie, invest somewhere between 90 minutes and 2.5 hours and see the whole thing and be done. So I have some series that I watch, but like Mayor of Easttown, I would give it a shot if I had the time. I'm slowly working right now through Peaky Blinders, which is unbelievable, and really enjoying that. But I'm even guilty of getting into a series like and getting halfway through and just kind of like, even though I enjoy it, just kind of stalling out and then having to come back and maybe watch it later. So The Last Kingdom is a series on Netflix, which is just, you know, Uhtred, and I love, it's a great, I just got through the middle of season 3 and just stalled out. So, I mean, I just don't see a lot, but I do enjoy dramas. I would definitely watch it if I had time, if I could cross my fancy. But again, the TV shows sometimes for me just don't make it.
This one's good. And David Denman, who is from The Office, he's Roy on The Office, which I know, Tony, you've never seen an episode of The Office, but you also may know him as the tight end in The Replacements, the deaf tight end, and Lance from Out Cold, the bartender. So
wow,
he is really good in this Mayor of Easttown as well. And the Philadelphia accents are
pretty good.
Unreal in this, and which is a very specific dialect. And I had in previous jobs spent a lot of time with people from Philadelphia and that part of Pennsylvania. And it's been really kind of nostalgic a little bit to hear, because I worked with a lot of construction companies in that part of towns or that part of the country. And so it was fun to hear these specific dialects again. And it's fun for me.
It's endearing. All right. So
Kate
now
Winslet's
we're going
such a good actor. Like she is good. She's so good in this show.
She's great. And she's very, I, she's not the type of person that you think Academy Award winning actress is going to do a lot of interviews. And I'll just shameless plug, within the last 3 to 4 months, she was on WTF with Marc Maron, his podcast. And she was just a delight. Like really enjoyed listening to her. She's got a great personality. So I'm all in on Kate Winslet, even though I have not watched the Titanic movie in its entirety, and I don't feel bad about that. I don't think I need to see it. I know how it ends.
Well, you've confessed that. Down. We can move on, right?
Yeah, I don't need to do it. All right, so Joel, I kind of want you to get us into this,
right?
The buffer battle and the bracket, just to kind of give people a refresher of what we've been doing and how we've got to this point, because as I understand it, only one of these pieces of content is going to move on. Is that correct?
Four pieces of content enter, only one can win. It's like a cage match at a Royal Rumble. I don't really watch wrestling, so if I say that wrong, please correct me. But this all started when we did a March Madness special where we did a bracket of who won the COVID content battle with our friend Mike Bridenstine. And he actually suggested on that podcast that maybe that's the what you guys do. So we each week we put two shows together and kind of discuss which one we think wins. And when we get to the four, we do eight pieces of content. There's four winners, and we bring them in at the end of the month or at the end of every 5 weeks or so. And we do a bracket to see who wins the battle. And this is the first one. And so this is the inaugural voyage, if you will. I'm pretty sure I mixed metaphors there, but nevertheless, here we are.
And I feel like for Ben Nitzel, you kind of get to play the role of like the Supreme Court. I mean, we're sort of going to litigate these pieces of content, and then it's up to you, right? There is no jury. You are judge and jury in this podcast.
It's kind of like being the principal at a school, right?
I'm ready. Yeah.
So I did the seedings. If now is your chance to speak against the seedings, if you think the seedings are dumb, or we're just going to roll as I seeded them. And so
I'm good with that. I think the first battle is a tough one, though.
Maybe not as tough as we think it is. Nobody was our number one seed, the Bob Odenkirk action film. And it's going to go up against number four, Godzilla versus Kong, of which I know Ben and I had a brief discussion on it in the school pickup line earlier this month. I will make the case for Kong, since Kong versus Godzilla is the underdog here. I will concede that it's not what you would traditionally call a good movie as far as the wonders of screenwriting and storytelling go. My only punch, and this is more like a cheat code from the Mortal Kombat game, my only punch is a flaming uppercut from down low, just saying that of the four things that we watched, this would be the first thing I probably turned back on and watched again, with nobody being the close second. Just because, as stressful and crazy as life is right now, turning on something as mindless and as simple as Kong versus Godzilla, that's where I would go. So that's my argument. It's not a great one, but it's the most rewatchable of the four.
And I think that's valid. I think the difference for me is when I think about Nobody with Bob Odenkirk is the surprise performance from somebody that has stereotypically only found themselves in comedic roles. So you get that. I feel like that's an immediate point in Bob Odenkirk's favor, is kind of breaking out of the mold that we have placed him in. And then just the knowing that you essentially have the John Wick team behind you. Now, at the same time, could that be something to take, you know, something that could go against Nobody a little bit? I mean, it is a little formulaic, but it does a great job of painting Bob Odenkirk's character as a true nobody. And then all of a sudden his family gets, you know, their house broken into, and that kind of takes him back to his days as this total BA former government employee that, when he shows up, nobody's left. So it's tough for me, because if I'm putting those two movies, Nobody versus Kong versus Godzilla, up against each other, I think Nobody is a better film overall. And that's how I'm judging it. I'm judging it as if someone was going to ask me, Tony, what should I watch? I've got Nobody and I've got Kong versus Godzilla. I'm going to say, go with Nobody, because you'll be surprised at the Odenkirk performance. You kind of know what you're going to get with Kong versus Godzilla. And if I'm being honest, and I said this on the show, I thought Kong versus Godzilla was underwhelming. I thought it was too short.
You're underwhelming.
And it didn't have any real consequences, because, spoiler alert, they both survive at the end because they need to continue these franchises. So all that you're left with is a bunch of destruction, a weird subplot with a conspiracy theory podcast that really doesn't advance the storyline.
But you have the Middle Earth, like literally the middle of Earth.
Right, you do. That is easier to access than I think we would realize. So, Ben, this is where the gavel's in your hand when you look at a nobody versus a Kong versus Godzilla. Who do you think deserves to move on?
Yeah, so I mean, it's tough because I did not see Nobody, although I desired to see it. I was intrigued by the trailers. It looked like, you know, suburban, less cool John Wick. And I was also excited to see Godzilla vs. Kong. And I did, in that movie, I did see. I would go with Nobody here. And I'll tell you, my problem with Godzilla vs. Kong is simply that what you said, Tony, it's not as fun as it should be. You know, and when I praised Mortal Kombat at the beginning of this podcast, you know, my big thing was Mortal Kombat knows what it is. You know what it is. And it really leans into that. And that's fine. That's its intent. With Kong versus Godzilla, or excuse me, Godzilla versus Kong, it should have been more fun. There should have been more exciting use of the city. I mean, their budget was unbelievable. Their special effects were great, but it's like they didn't use the city very well. Yes, the water battle was amazing. That was really fun. But other than that, it was kind of a snoozer. The plot is like not even really serviceable. It just felt like you didn't need to come up with much, and somehow they still screwed that up. So for that reason, I think we got to go with Nobody, because I watched Godzilla vs. Kong and I feel like I should be wanting to high five my buddy and laughing. It maybe at the ridiculousness, but also how cool it was. And really, I just found myself hoping it was over soon.
And I think we would all agree, all three of us, and maybe I can't remember if all three of us saw Kong Skull Island together, but that's an enjoyable film. I really like that. I had a great time at Kong Skull Island, and that's what my expectation was, to have that much fun, and it was void of that. And I think I don't know. I just feel like
you don't have to defend going. You win. You don't have to defend it. You beat me on this one.
And I'm trying to be, listen, it's the Irish guilt. I'm trying to be a gracious winner. Well, I'll take my nobody victory.
That's why don't you sure. Take your nobody victory while we take a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
All right, we're back. It's the Buffer Podcast. Definitely want you to do a couple things before we get back to the bracket. Rate and review this podcast wherever you get your podcast, if that's on Apple or any other service where you can leave a review. That helps us a lot. And make sure you hit that subscribe button, as we've been cranking out Buffer Podcasts each and every week. They drop on Fridays, and that's going to be the plan, because we've only got more and more content to sort out. So to recap, it was Bob Odenkirk's Nobody taking on Kong versus Godzilla. The verdict was in the favor of Nobody. And Joel, now we look at an interesting battle, to say the least. And the more and more that I'm looking at this matchup, I'm thinking I'm the one that really pushed for both of these to be there, but one in particular, I don't even know how it's gonna hold up. But it's Q Into the Storm, the QAnon documentary series on HBO Max, and the 90s movie Camp Nowhere on Disney Plus, where you can find it, starring Christopher Lloyd. So I want to almost defer to you to make the case for Q Into the Storm, because I really have to kind of think about what I can say to really prop Camp Nowhere up. It's just going to be propped up on pure nostalgia, I think.
Well, I think one of them is an absurd picture into how you can get people to believe something and they really buy in and they have a really enjoyable experience with it, and it becomes a huge part of their lives. And then the other is a documentary about one of the largest conspiracy theories in the history of mankind. And so the whole QAnon documentary, as we talked about in previous episode, is, you know, kind of deep diving into the platform that Q made its drops on, this 4chan and 8chan, these bastions of free speech. And I think we've talked a lot about it in a previous episode that was over an hour long, and I'm not going to rehash all of that. But,
and it was really well done, and I think that's what was tough for me, is I didn't know if I would be into it, because it's kind of like recent history, that Q Into the Storm. And again, we've been living through a pandemic, and it's like, do you want to kind of go down the rabbit hole, so to speak? Well, but it was really, really well done.
Well, I think that the thing that
and did it did
the thing that documentary showed us was that if you bought into QAnon and it's what you are believing in, it spoke to your belief system, which I'll admit is not mine. It's not where I am in the landscape of the United States right now. It is prophecy for a lot of people. I mean, that is how they feel about the words of Q. And what this documentary kind of showed is no one really knows who this person is, and Q kind of is what you believe Q to be, whether you are. And it was just interesting to see, because I kind of was just like, oh, this is kind of crazy. But then I kind of let me see. And then, like, the reason I think this was so strong is because it painted the picture of, oh, I understand. I understand why people are all in on this. Versus you watch some documentaries about radicalized populations of people and you're like, oh boy, that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. And you find yourself judging. I didn't find myself judging all of these people as strongly as I have other documentaries about this type of behavior.
And then you have Camp Nowhere, which is a 1994 comedy.
Yeah, one of these things is not like the other. That's for certain.
The kids that get to run their own summer camp, and Christopher Lloyd is there, and you know,
Christopher Lloyd could be cute.
I was 11 years old, and we talk a lot about nostalgia on this show, and Camp Nowhere is definitely that. Jessica Alba is in it in a kind of a small role. Andrew Keegan. It's one of those things, like, I think as you put together a battle between QAnon and Camp Nowhere, you're almost looking at it like, do you want to be depressed about the realities and the times that we're living in, or do you just want to unplug for 85 minutes and go on an adventure to camp? I'm glad, for one, that I don't have to make the decision. That's what Ben Nitzel is here for, to see who advances between Q Into the Storm and Camp Nowhere. First of all, Ben, I have to assume you've seen Camp Nowhere, surely, right?
I have not. Don't call me Shirley.
I bet it's one of those movies that if you like looked up the Camp Nowhere and you saw like the cover of what would have been the VHS DVD, I have to think you stumbled across it. Now, it's certainly not one of those movies that was on every Saturday on TNT, like Enemy of the State or Shawshank Redemption, but it's out there enough that, but maybe this is just one that you missed, and maybe I'm wrong for assuming. Shame on me.
No, I may have just missed it, or I might see a piece of it. Maybe I've probably seen it somewhere. I'm sure you're right. I didn't watch as many movies in the early to mid 90s as I did once I got out of college. So that could be a piece of it as well. But I like Christopher Lloyd. You had me intrigued with Jessica Alba, although she's probably 12. So actually, I think that ends up being a negative for me. But yeah, it's interesting.
All right. So what do you think is worth advancing to take on Nobody? Q Into the Storm, limited series, docuseries on HBO Max, or Camp Nowhere? I don't know if there's any case I could make for Camp Nowhere where it is even mentioned in the same breath as this Q Into the Storm. That's how good it is.
Well, you know, maybe this is, since this is kind of a new format for you guys, maybe this is an opportunity you could help me out a little bit here. What is sort of the criteria by which you are choosing or hoping that these pieces of content are chosen? Have you considered sort of, you know, what is it that you want? Like, what do you hope is the deciding factor between content A and content B?
It's a really good question. I think we're still kind of in development.
Okay, so
well, we bring the audience behind the curtain here a little bit, and
I think we've had different approaches to each week. The Camp Nowhere shows up because one week we were talking about 90s movies that we think people should see that maybe they haven't, right? And then there's been other conversations about more timely releases, and that's where you would see like a Nobody and a Godzilla versus Kong and a Q Into the Storm, the John Wayne Gacy documentary. So I think it can vary. I think it kind of depends on the schedule of things that are coming out, right? Just looking ahead into May, we've got a couple ideas connected to themes, you know, baseball movies and stuff like that. But at the same time, as we mentioned at the start, there is a lot of new releases that are coming out, and that can kind of help shape what we look at and hope to bring in to battle each other. But it ultimately has to be treated like, what do we think is the best piece of content that would be worthy of advancing in a competition? And that needs to be judged as such. Like, nobody is better than Kong versus Godzilla, Q Into the Storm versus Camp Nowhere. What's the verdict, Judge?
Well, based on what you've said, I think that I would probably go with Q Into the Storm, simply because I think that Camp Nowhere certainly has a nostalgic factor, but I don't know that it's good enough on its own merits that someone who is like me that has not seen either of these and had 2 hours on their hands is going to go Camp Nowhere, unless I've got the Princess Crew in tow, and then that's not really fair. So, you know, then we're going to watch a documentary. So
I think they would not like Q Into the Storm, that's for certain.
No, fair enough.
All right, so Q Into the Storm advancing to take on Nobody. So this is tough, Joel. I feel like both of these are heavy, literally, heavy hitting pieces of content. One is a docuseries with Q Into the Storm that examines the QAnon and tries to really find out who this Q person is, and it takes you on a journey, and it's
it goes emotional. All the way through the insurgency. Like, they're filming during the insurgency on January 6th.
And then, you know, Nobody at the same time is kind of grounded in reality, as we learn that Nobody, the star, Bob Odenkirk, kind of came up with this idea after he and his family had several break-ins at their house and how traumatic those experiences were. So that's kind of something that, of course, none of us want to have to deal with. So they're both a little... you know, essentially they're both grounded in reality, so to speak. Q Into the Storm definitely, you know, is chronicling history that's not too long ago. And then Nobody is, you know, even if it is kind of grounded in reality, it is still a fictional film. And it does sound like there will be a potential for a sequel, which is, I think, is exciting. So again, if we're looking at these two things as very good pieces of content, very different. This is almost like a perfect matchup, in my opinion, because they're both so well done.
And I think my opinion of these two, like how we compare it, especially when we get to the final pairing, is if a coworker of mine saw these two things on a list and they asked me my opinion as to if I had to watch one of these, what would it be? That to me is kind of my criteria as these are paired up against one another. If I had to pick one, you know, that discussion that, you know, I mean, we've all got little kids. How many times have we said that if we are giving choices, if you had to pick one, which one are you picking? That's kind of where I'm at on the criteria. And for me, if I had to pick one of these two, I would pick Q Into the Storm would be my pick. That's my vote.
Which is interesting, because if you're picking one, then you're automatically going to have to jump into five additional ones, right? Because you're
right,
surely
five out, just, yeah.
But it's six pieces of content, if I'm not mistaken. So if it's one versus one, I mean, Nobody is, I think, an hour and a half. It is a complete film. It is a good film. But you're saying that if you're looking at it as a one for one, you think that first episode of Q Into the Storm is so good that it would propel it over Nobody?
I do.
Well, again, this is why Ben's here, because I don't want to have to make the decision, because I know how I feel. Ben, what are you thinking?
Oh boy. Well, the good news is I haven't seen either of them, so in that sense, it's a fair fight. I think, you know, on one hand, they're both interesting in the sense of, I think they both require you to be in a particular mood to want to watch them, right? I mean, they're not sort of universally, you know, one of these movies or pieces of content you pop on at any particular time, you know. That being said, I think, again, I'm making this up mostly. I think I picked Q Into the Storm mostly because Nobody seemed a little bit compelling, but I also wonder if I would just be thinking to myself, why didn't I just put John Wick back on? or, you know, why didn't I watch, why Taken. Am I not watching, huh?
Taken, right. I mean, Taken, there's.
Yeah, why am I not watching Taken again? Because it's really sweet and I love Liam Neeson. Like, I.
And the girl runs amazingly in that movie. Worst yeah, run in the history of movies is the girl in Taken.
Tom Cruise That's likes that word with that, but I, you know, I just think that it's. I just Nobody is not a movie that I will probably. I missed it in the theater. If I had seen it in the theater, if I'd been going to the theater when it was coming out, I probably would have seen it. But since I missed it, I just don't see myself going back and ever finding it, looking it up. Right. Whereas Cue Into the Storm, I might be curious enough to give episode one a shot. You know, if I had access, I'd say, yeah, let's give episode one a shot and see what it's like. So for me, that's, I think, why it wins. I'm more likely to go seek that out now that I kind of missed the initial release of both. Whereas I think nobody, there wasn't enough buzz around it. And it feels like, and this could be completely unfair, but it feels like movies I've already seen before that I really enjoy probably more.
That's very fair. And again, as someone that really enjoyed Cue Into the Storm, I can't be mad at the loss. And I would just say this, grab your Viking helmets and your Dominion voting machines, because here comes Cue Into the Storm. And it is a wild ride. If you haven't seen it, you heard it here first, the Buffer Podcast. The winner of the battle for the month of April is Cue Into the Storm. That is great. And it is on HBO Max, so you can check that out. All right. I want to get right into the Buffer Guilty Pleasures. Joel, for people that are listening to the Buffer Podcast for the first time, what is a Buffer Guilty Pleasure? Can you explain it to the fine people?
So the Buffer Guilty Pleasures are just our personal comfort food, if you will, shows or movies. Things that we will turn on when we don't want to think, or we want to just have it either on in the background, or we want to be entertained. And but also, if someone knows you as a from a personality standpoint, it may not be the first thing that they just associate you as being. That's one of the first things you would turn on. That's kind of a tertiary aspect of this, but really just kind of our comfort food that you. Some of the things we might not be super comfortable just saying. Yeah, this is what I watch when in my free time, but yeah, that's all they are. The Guilty Pleasure. It's kind of like a Never Gonna Give You Up song by Rick Astley. I love it. I'll listen to it anytime it's on, but I'm not going to walk around and say, man, that's one of my top five favorite songs.
Guilty Pleasure. It's also eating half a box of vanilla wafers and not feeling bad about it, right? I mean, sometimes...
With peanut butter. Have you ever put peanut butter on a vanilla wafer?
I don't have a death wish. Oh, no. I mean, I dip them in chocolate milk like a man. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't do
peanut
milk.
Butter. I think you're living in the future. Well, since Ben's our guest, I think I want to be a good host. We should be good hosts and let Ben offer up to the Buffer audience his guilty pleasure. So what would you go with, Ben?
Sure. No, this was very exciting. It's hard to narrow down. I'm going to take you back on a journey. I'm going to take you back in time. You can get in your DeLorean, Tony. I know that's a dream for you. We can go all the way back to the 1970s and visit a little classic called Pumping Iron, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lou Ferrigno, pre-Hulk. A movie, a documentary, and not just a documentary, but truly a mockumentary, right? It's half true, half made up, about professional bodybuilding in its heyday, or at least maybe at the beginning of its heyday, when Arnold was competing in the Mr. Olympia. And it's awesome. It follows, I think, four or five different bodybuilders in different weight classes as they go through. It's got some of the all-timer Arnold quotes that you can definitely find on YouTube if you look up. It's super fun. Like, it's really enjoyable. It is sort of the template for the, you know, sort of quirky, mockumentary style of film. And again, it's most of it's true, right? The competition footage is true. The training is true. They just kind of goose some things to make it seem like maybe there was some more shenanigans between the lifters than there really probably was, right? A little more animosity than there really was. But it's awesome. And it's really intriguing too, because I mean, this is, you know, the steroids were certainly in use, although you don't see any of that on there, but just where the bodybuilding was, and it's one of those really fascinating subcultures that if you don't know about it, you just it's interesting to get a peek into that world. And I love it. I actually bought it with one of my buddies. Neither one of us wanted to pay the full $20 for the DVD. back in the mid 2000s. So we chipped in it together so we could watch it. And it is super fun, really enjoyable. I love Arnold. And this is classic, young, really fun Arnold.
Well, I think the good news is for people that are listening to the Buffer podcast that haven't seen Pumping Iron, not only is it just an hour and 25 minutes, 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. Is that the highest rated Arnold Schwarzenegger movie? I would have to check.
Oh, Twins has to be higher. T2? T2's got to be like 97%.
Listen, I was shocked at 91%. It's one of those movies that I've seen probably two or three times, and one of those times for sure was with my dad. And you're right, Ben, it is it's quirky, but it's so good. I wonder if it's, I don't know if it's on any of the streaming services. I'm assuming you could probably buy it on
Video,
Amazon Prime.
It's on Prime Video. I just pulled it up just now. It is starting to play on my phone, Pumping Iron on Prime Video.
It's easy to, it's probably my hindsight's 2020, but it isn't hard to watch it and understand that like this guy had a real star quality. Right. I mean, every time Arnold's on the screen, and again, there could be some confirmation bias there because I'm watching it for the first time in the early 2000s, and we know what had happened to Arnold by then. But it's just not hard to see that this guy, despite the language barrier and everything, is just like there's when he's on the screen, it's all eyes on him. It's just the magnetism, and it's super fun. I mean, it's just really fun. And like you said, hour and 25 minutes does not outstay its welcome. You get in, you see this crazy subculture. It's really fun and enjoyable. And anytime I catch it on, I am hooked. I'm in on it. If it's on TV somewhere, or now that I know it's on Amazon Prime, it's great. Really enjoyable.
The perfect guilty pleasure. Joel, yours is kind of also appropriate. You at the intro to Guilty Pleasure talked about comfort food, and literally your guilty pleasure is that, right? And it's a show that I think I got to interview a couple of the stars several years ago.
Yeah, I have been in on this Bravo series since series one in New York when Harold won. I couldn't tell you anything else about Harold other than he won season one of Top Chef. I am a sucker for competition shows. I love things like The Challenge, like on MTV and this type of show. And I love to cook. I love food. I love to travel and eat different kinds of food. And this show kind of scratches that itch. And it's in season, I think it's season 15 or something like that right now. They're in Portland.
Wow.
This year they go around and there's all sorts of chefiness. And it's been fun to watch the evolution of it. It's very much a different show than it was, in the early 2000s when I started watching it. And it's also kind of one of the shows that my wife likes to sit down and watch with me, and we watch it together. And, as my wife and I love each other very much, but we have very different tastes in what we want to watch. And This Is Us and Top Chef are kind of those two shows for us. And so, I actually have found some really kind of creative ideas. I do most of the cooking in my family. It's made some really kind of high level. I don't cook like these chefs do, but it's fun to try, African recipes and to not be intimidated by it, because you've seen these chefs talk about it. Yeah, so Top Chef, I record it. It's one of those things that, like I said, Lindsay and I watch. And if you met me and looked at, like, if you had to look at my resume, you might not say, hey, this guy loves him some Michelin star chefs cooking on Bravo. But I do. It's one of my favorite shows, and it's definitely a guilty pleasure.
I feel like Top Chef, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but it's kind of like Chopped is for me. Like, my wife and I would watch Chopped, and half the time you're watching and half the time you're like dealing with a kid or looking at your phone, but you're kind of getting the gist of it.
You see, but you know? it's so, and I hear what you're saying, and I got to just defend my guys on Top Chef a little bit, because these judges, they're awesome. Tom Colicchio is the head judge. And it's funny because, like, the editors of these shows are so good. So they're like, they do these quick fire challenges where they've got to cook, a 3-course meal in 35 minutes, and they can only use leftover cork from a champagne bottle. And no, I'm just kidding. That's a little bit of an exaggeration.
What?
No, but it's you can only use peanut butter as your primary protein or something like that. And one person will be like, I'm going to make this Korean porridge or whatever. And Tom just like looks at him like, or you could just make a grilled peanut butter and jelly sandwich that's really good and we'll eat that. Like, it's like you have these high level chefs who really, they just want to eat something simple that you make perfectly. And so it's just kind of fun to watch how some people shoot themselves in the foot. And but it's a little bit more interactive with the judges than like on a show like Chopped. And that's why you kind of want to have it quiet and not have your kids around in the background distracting you, because there's some really kind of intense, fun moments to experience.
Yeah, and speaking of intense, listen, if you people out there are looking for fun and you have 26 minutes while your family is asleep and you accidentally start watching Wall Street on HBO Max, that's my guilty pleasure, Mark Wahlberg. It's a documentary series about Mark Wahlberg and his life, and it kind of starts, I think there's six episodes.
Does it start at 3 a.m.? Like, his day allegedly starts at 3 a.m.?
Well, they do allude to that, but it starts with him in an office with like a mask and gloves on, and then it kind of works back to how he got to the pandemic. And it's really about all the different ventures he's involved in, like Wahlburgers and that F45 Fitness, and he has a clothing line, which I didn't know, called Municipal. And then yes, it does deal with his acting, his family. He's got I think four young kids, giant awesome looking mansion. And I feel like, you know, I like Mark Wahlberg. I feel like there's a lot of people that are on the fence, or that would maybe, I think you can get oversaturated with some celebrities. And I think Mark Wahlberg's probably reached that point. I would also argue that people like Vin Diesel have been there, which is a fun way to poke our guest Ben Nitzel just a little bit. And if you're watching on the Patreon Zoom feed, you can see how big Ben's eyes just got.
See, now you say that we're going to have to get a Patreon Zoom feed. Now I don't have that set up yet.
I think Mark Wahlberg has been around for a while. He's had different alliterations. He was a rapper. He was an underwear model. He's an actor. He's a mogul. He's a businessman. And he's just likable. And maybe that's what he has more in common with Vin Diesel, is that they're both likable people, right? Did you like that shot, though, Ben? That's a little shot at your guy.
I'm not sure Vin Diesel's even that likable, but it's a great franchise. I'll say that.
Where are you at on the... Well, first off, Mark Wahlberg's mother did pass away this week.
And this is also kind of like, I've got to interview Donnie Wahlberg, and again, that he's another guy that people either love or hate. He was super nice, and
you interviewed a new kid on the block.
I've interviewed I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I've interviewed three of the new kids on the block.
So let me guess which ones. Jordan Knight, Donnie Wahlberg, and Joey McIntyre.
That is correct.
Those are also the only three I can name.
Well, there's the Jordan's brother that's not very social. But anyways, Wall Street is fun. It's mindless. It's 25 minutes. It's quick hitters. Check it out if you have HBO Max. All right, Joel.
Worth pointing out, if I can just interject.
Yes, please.
W-H-A-L Street.
That's correct.
But I saw that in your notes. And hey, can I do one more? I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel bad because I didn't realize that my guilty pleasure was a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, although it totally deserves to be. So here's something a little more off the wall. I'll be very brief. Probably one of my favorite guilty pleasures. I talk about not watching a lot of TV, but when I get an opportunity, I really, really enjoy Rick Steves' Travels Through Europe on PBS, which is on at 5 o'clock every day. I don't get to watch it a lot, but when I do get to watch it, me and my kids like to play a game where we try to guess during the credits where Rick's going to be this particular episode. I like to go with the Maldives, although he's over very rarely in the Maldives. But I really enjoy it. It's pretty hokey. Like, Rick is not super cool. Oh, they just have great travel tips, by the way. If you can travel just to carry on, it's unbelievable. But I just really like being in Europe, and I enjoy Rick's nerdiness as he travels through and tries to engage in different cultures and traditions. And it's a lot of fun. It's great PBS programming.
The amount of memories you're triggering from freshman year Italian at Oak Park River Forest High School, when we had to watch Rick Steves' travel adventures. That dude, he had to have gotten mugged at least all the time, because he always stood out with like a plaid shirt on or a Hawaiian shirt and some khakis. And he's really excited to show you around. I think that I haven't thought about Rick Steves in a long time. And
man, it's a great show. Really enjoyable to see the places he goes and see some cool stuff. And but it's really hokey and really nerdy, but it is very enjoyable.
Is it possible that I've seen more episodes of Rick Steves' travel shows than I have Fast and the Furious movies? Maybe.
Have you not seen all the Fast and Furious movies?
I think there's like the third one I missed. So I don't even know what it's called. Tokyo Drift. Okay, so maybe that's my pass. All right, we've got to get into the confessional, the buffer confessions. Joel, can you open the door to the confessional?
Confessions.
All right, so when you get into the buffer confessional, you're in the trust tree, and it's okay to admit things that you haven't seen. A lot of these are your water cooler TV shows or movies, or it's that line that's quoted from a film with your friends, and you kind of for all those years have stood there and laughed awkwardly because you haven't seen that movie or that TV show. So again, I think with I'm just looking at the notes. I'm looking at
I feel like
you admitted that you don't get to see a lot of TV shows. So do you find yourself being in that moment where people are talking about a popular TV show and you're just standing there like, I don't have a frame of reference for this?
Well, a little bit. Now, luckily being in education, like people don't gather much. We all have breaks at different times. So it isn't, and I work with a lot of like middle-aged women, so we're not necessarily hitting on the same wavelengths anyway. But yes, I mean, there's certainly shows, you know, like the Veep, the Americans, the, all kinds of things that I've never seen. I don't know much about. And so, yeah, I definitely am on the receiving end of this.
So do you have a confession that you want to share with the Buffer podcast audience?
Yeah, well, so I feel bad because I didn't know it was really supposed to be centered around things I haven't seen that I probably should have seen. But my confession is, I still feel like this is worthy of confessing. So I graduated high school in 1996, and I hate Pulp Fiction. And I've tried to watch Pulp Fiction probably four different times. And if you guys have covered this, I really didn't hear the episode if you did talk about it. But I've tried to watch it four different times at different stages of my life. Like, because it's, I mean, as a graduate of 96, this is supposed to be right in my wheelhouse. This is supposed to be a movie I love. And I'm not like a Quentin Tarantino like fanboy, but listen, I love Inglourious Basterds. The Kill Bill movies are phenomenal. I would rewatch those at any point. I love Hateful Eight. Plenty of things that he's done, I'm a big fan of and I enjoy. But boy, every time I watch that movie, I'm just like, this is not enjoyable for me. I do not like this. And I've talked to people that are much older than me, people that are much younger than me, and certainly people in my age bracket, and they will talk about how this is their favorite movie of all time, and I literally can't make it through.
It's the same.
And it even stars people I love. I love Bruce Willis. I love Vin Rains. I love, you know, Samuel L. Jackson, like it's John Travolta, whatever, but I hate it.
It was literally my confession last week. So this is perfect
because he's never seen it.
I haven't seen it. And I still haven't seen it since I confessed. So I'm with you, but Joe, I think on the other hand, thinks pretty highly of Pulp Fiction.
No, it was correct? I agree with Ben 100%. I don't like it at all. That was kind of my, I had Ben, you and I almost have the exact same feelings of it. I should like it, but I don't, and I never have.
So this makes me feel even better about having not seen it, because it sounds like I'm not missing anything.
Most people would disagree with that sentiment, but I'm telling
you. But I think it's like the TV show Lost. I think Lost is a garbage show. I thought it was garbage from the jump, and then but it became such an important cultural thing that no one's going to tell you it's bad. Game of Thrones, I think, kind of can work its way into that as well. I know I'm getting into some hot water maybe with that. But Pulp Fiction, you know, I'm with you, Ben. I don't like it either. Not one bit.
All right, Joel,
not even a little bit. I feel like Dr. Seuss all of a sudden.
Joel, what are you confessing?
So my confession is that I have never seen the Star Wars Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith, because the Phantom Menace was so bad, in my opinion. I was like, I don't want to watch these other two movies. And so I've not seen the second and third, you know, the prequels of the Star Wars franchises. It just, the IP lost me after Phantom Menace. So I've never seen them. I've never had any desire to see them. And so that's my confession.
I saw all three in theaters, and the first one was kind of like a cultural phenomenon, and I'll never forget it because packed theater, people dressed up, kind of burned into my memory. I feel like Attack of the Clones, out of those three, I don't know, it's tough because there's some good moments in,
but I know enough to reference them, kind of like we talked about, like, because isn't the I Have the Higher Ground from one of those movies, like with, and I know that line, I know why it's important, but I've never seen it actually in the movie.
I think you would enjoy Attack of the Clones. I don't know, again, is it worth the 142 minute runtime? That's to be seen.
But Ben's shaking his head no.
So just it knocked me off my soapbox in, 90 seconds. Phantom Menace is decent, especially if you were to go through and edit out all the parts where young Anakin Skywalker is in them. If you just got rid of everything where young Annie's in it, you'd be like, this is a pretty good movie. This is a good start, right? You know, it'd be short, but it'd be good. The Attack of the Clones is not good. I've gone back and tried to watch it with a fresh attitude. Like, hey, and there are some decent parts, right? There's a couple parts that are kind of fun. But for the, like, I love Count Dooku. He's sweet. But, like, for the most part, the movie is just hot garbage. It's just so bad. It's poorly acted. The love story is, like, beyond half-baked. It's just, I mean, it's like cutting into the brownies and it's all soupy. And then Revenge of the Sith is interesting. I think for younger people, like my brother, who's 21, would say that that's his favorite Star Wars movie of all time. That's a terrible take. But I think for people that are younger, it's like they really like it. It's fine. It's probably the best of the three, but it's not great. It's not great, especially if you watch something like Rogue One or whatever compared to it. It's just like, so they're fine. I think they're worth seeing. I think you've got kids of the age where you can make a case, Joel, where you could watch it with your son.
Yeah.
It would be fine. It's worth seeing. But especially Attack of the Clones is not great.
All right. Well, this one's kind of embarrassing because it's one of those movies that I feel like, not that it comes up that often, but certainly, and again, I'm going to chalk it up to the fact that I was probably too young when it first came out, so I wouldn't have seen it. And then it's one of those movies that, like, I know that it's brilliant, right? But I haven't seen Aliens.
Now, are you talking Alien, like the first one, or are you talking about the sequel Aliens?
I'm sorry, Alien. I misspoke. You're correct. So the Alien, I think I've seen Aliens, but Alien from 1979, Ridley Scott. Again, kind of like what Joel was saying about Attack of the Clones. I know enough about it. I feel like I could describe the plot, but came out before I was here. And it was one of those movies that when it was on, it was a little scary when you're growing up.
It's scary now and I'm 39.
But I feel like if there was, you know, with the buffer confession, like I admitted, Ben, a couple weeks ago that I hadn't seen Beverly Hills Cop and people let me know about it. And I've since watched it and it's fantastic and I totally get it. And that's how I feel like what I need to do with Alien, because I can't sit here and say that I'm a horror fan or that genre. I love Ridley Scott. I bet that Alien, the original, is still just as good as it was when it was released in 1979.
I've never seen it, mostly for the same reasons that you say, which is it's a horror movie, which I don't necessarily love. And I was too young. I would have been too scared, and I don't have reason to go back. Now, Aliens is unbelievable. I love it. You know, I mean, come on, if you've not yelled Game Over, Man, at some point in your life and got a terrible impression, I don't know what's wrong with you. So I also haven't seen Beverly Hills Cop. But again, what's interesting is, like, for me, a lot of the things, because I've listened to your guys' podcast, I enjoy it, and but when you say a lot of things, it's also, I have the same confession, because I didn't watch a lot of movies until I got out of college and had a little more free time and was an adult and could do that thing. So a lot of those sort of classics, many of them I have not seen, and I am right there with you with Alien. I know what the plot is. I know it's a horror movie. I'm sure it's supposed to be phenomenal. But I just don't see myself dialing that one up. Again, if I was going to watch it, I'd rather just go to Aliens, and I think the sort of, you know, gun-toting action carnage of that is much more enjoyable.
The reason I watched Alien, I was in middle school, and we had watched Spaceballs. And I didn't know what the final scene was in reference to. And my friend Billy's dad, Bill, told us, he's like, oh, well, it's from this, you know, movie Alien from, you know, the 70s. And so then the next weekend we went to, I'm trying to remember the video store that was over by Rudy's Tacos over off of Park Avenue. Video Warehouse. Video Warehouse. and we rented Alien and proceeded to not sleep well that night because it was terrifying for us as 13, 14, or no, we were younger than that. But one of our friends' parents just rented it for us, the VHS tape. But I'm a big Ridley Scott fan. I'm on record. And I think that that started that love. And I had a film professor who talked about the camera work of that movie a lot in college. So I've seen Alien probably four or five times.
Well, it sounds like we can all maybe get together and at a safe distance watch it one of these days. Well, all right, before we go.
Do we have to safe distance it, though? Aren't we vaccinated? Aren't we good to like actually kind of talk to each other in close spaces now?
Yeah, I mean, I just think like, you know, if Ben doesn't like horror films, am I going to want to be right next to him if he's jumpy?
Fair point.
I don't want to catch an elbow or anything. Mm. All right, before we get out of here, the last thing that we do on the Buffer Podcast is dress socks and Crocs. And oddly enough, Joe, I'm wearing my Crocs right now.
Nice.
Slap it, tap it, wait.
Dress socks and Crocs.
Okay, so parenting,
hold on.
Wins and losses. Yes.
I had one of my coworkers stop me and they're like, what is that segment? Like, what is that slappy pappy thing? What is that? And I feel like we need to explain it. So I don't call Tony without him answering the phone slappy pappy. Like, that's how he answers the phone when I call him. And it's one of the best sketches from modern Saturday Night Live times. What was that? What was the compilation album? Like comedians of something or other.
They're riffing on like wacky.
Oh, it's tagline comic tour. So that's what it is.
Yeah. And they're just kind of playing on those comedians that would have those one-liners or those zingers or get her done. And Bobby Moynihan
Slappy Pappy.
Whose name is Slappy Pappy, and that's just kind of his go-to, and it's on YouTube and it's hilarious. And you could just search, you could do a simple search of SNL Slappy Pappy, and there's at least two times I think Slappy Pappy shows up in a compilation with other fake comedians, and it's awesome because I think we all kind of appreciate good stand-up or bad stand-up, and it makes me laugh still, and it's just one of those things that's silly and then it's always going to make me laugh.
And it's kind of an inside thing for us too. So yeah. So who wants to start with our funny moments of life? Tony, I started last week with my old sausage foot, old squash foot, which is better, by the way, I'm out of my boot.
That's good. I feel like, again, to be a good host would be to defer to your guest. And if anybody's life is busy, it's Ben's with all of the people in his house. So I imagine you could do a podcast, Ben, that it was just about funny parenting moments, life moments. You could do a new one every single day, probably.
Perhaps, but you got to give me a moment to think here. I was a little bit confused as to what you wanted this to be. So I'd love to hear one of you go first and that might help me out.
Perfect. All right. So let me just say at my house, we're 2 weeks away from moving again, which would be the second move in 2 years. Just need a little bit more house. So my garage is full of moving boxes. And my wife has really meticulously organized them. She's taped them. They're sorted. They're marked either living room, kitchen, or by kid's name. Ted is 6 years old. Ted saw a box in the garage the other day that said his name. And he said, why does that say my name? And I said, well, it has stuff for your room at the new house. And he said, well, what kind of stuff is in it? And I was like, it's stuff that you're not using. And before I could say anything else, he had torn the box open and he looked at me and he said, why are you hiding all my stuff? And I had to try and explain to him that we're moving. And these are things again, that you're not using, that were primarily in the basement playroom. And it did not go well. So I think the moral of the story for my dress socks and Crocs parenting wins and losses and funny moments from life is that nobody should move multiple times with multiple kids because it's brutal and tiring.
Yeah, it exhausts me just listening to you talk about moving again. And 5 years, and I feel like five years ago I did it. Like to
And I've talked about this a lot in this segment, but this is what's in my wheelhouse, right? I go to work, I come home, and we're getting ready and we're getting close. And I'm sitting in my basement right now, and I'm thinking about this giant sectional. And I'm so glad that I hired movers, because I don't even know how it got down here in the first place, because it's kind of a narrow entrance to the basement. But it's all good. So that's what's happening in my life. And again, I do want to point out, wearing Crocs at the moment with no dress socks though. So Joel, Ben, who wants to go next with your dress socks and Crocs?
Go ahead, Joel.
I'll go next. So I mentioned last week I'm coaching a travel 10U baseball team, and we played in our first full-on tournament this past weekend. And we have a really fun team. The kids are great. We've got a great group of parents. I think that's, you know, Ben, you coached a long time. Parents can be the biggest challenge with any sort of coach, whether it's a youth sports or whether it's school sponsored sports. And we were able to get this team together. They were going to get cut. They were going to, the organization I coach with only has limited roster spots, and they were actually going to cut about six or seven kids. And instead, we formed a second team, and we kind of built our roster out. So we're a developmental team. None of our kids had ever pitched in a game before. And so we're really developing pitchers, and we're doing a nice job. The kids are working really hard. But the hardest part about pitching is the mental aspect of it, which is just getting mad at yourself sometimes on the mound when it's not going your way. So I've always tried to be good at keeping it loose. You know, I'll talk a little bit about the mechanics, but just get them mentally relaxed. And I usually try to tell a dad joke or something silly when I go out for a mound visit if I've got to kind of go. And one of our players does not find any of the jokes I tell funny at any straight. He just gets mad at the jokes. And so as I'm walking out to talk to him on the mound, I'm thinking, what can I do to loosen this kid up? And I get about halfway to the mound. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get to the mound, and I'm saying, we're going to play best 2 out of 3 paper, rock, scissors. So I go to the mound, don't say a word about pitching. Everyone's looking at us, and I play this kid in best 2 out of 3 paper, rock, scissors, and it loosened him up. He struck a guy out, got in the dugout, got out of the inning. I looked like a genius. It was not lost on me that if he had struggled, it would have been like, what the hell did that guy go out and play paper, rock, scissors for? This guy needs to learn. He needed to tell him how to pitch. He didn't need to go play games. Fast forward to in between games, apparently it's traveled around the tournament, and one of the parents from another team was like, are you the coach that played paper, rock, scissors in the middle of the game? I'm like, yeah, I am. So I don't know if I started a trend or if I'm just going to be known as the crazy guy who does stupid stuff on the mound when he goes.
The better question is, did you let the kid win, or did you win?
We did not win. Oh, no, he won the paper, rock, scissors. I don't let people win paper, rock, scissors. Are you kidding me? No, he beat me. He beat me fair and square. Best 2 out of 3. He got me with a rock on scissors, and away we go.
That's great. I love that you were almost so competitive that your pitcher in distress, you almost had to beat it rock, paper, scissors. That's fantastic. All right, Ben, anything come to mind from your world?
Really struggling. We just trying to think of something funny. A lot of funny stuff happens, but I don't know if any of it's like too hilarious.
How are you handling the Aaron Rodgers news as a Packer fan?
Well, that's not funny, Joel. That I don't want to talk about. We'll see. I don't know if that's overblown. It's hard to tell. It's interesting that it's on draft day, but it hasn't seemed to affect the draft. They haven't really made any huge changes or whatever. I will say, you know, so we had our seventh daughter this February 2nd. And so we are now in a scenario where we cannot all travel to the same location in the same vehicle. So we are still looking for, you know, one of the mega vans. And we're kind of taking our time. I mean, it's nice because our kids are so young that we really don't want to go anywhere, period. And then you sort of layer COVID on top of that. And we haven't, other than church, we don't have places we go. So, but it is interesting because we do have to sometimes make decisions on, okay, who am I taking? And then which van? One of our vans seats 7, one of our vans seats 8. So if me or my wife are going somewhere and we're taking all the kids, then we have to take a white van. But if we're leaving at least one kid home, then either van is available. So that's been a little bit interesting to get used to. And, you know, we don't do a lot of the travel sports. Just, again, our lifestyle doesn't really permit that. But our girls, my girls are getting older. Joel, of course, my oldest is the same age as your oldest. And so we've got 4 kids playing on 6 soccer teams. And then we've got 3 kids playing on 2 softball teams. So it's all local, which is nice, right? Because we're not traveling for tournaments on the weekends or whatever. But it does, I mean, there's a lot of, like my wife made a really phenomenal like spreadsheet of our nights and then where, who has to be where, when, and that's taking a little bit of coordination. So it's interesting, right? This is one of the reasons I actually gave up football this year, which was a hard decision for me. And of course I was able to do the announcement gig with you, Joel, but I hated giving it up, but we were just getting to a point where our kids are getting old enough that they're in activities.
Right.
You know, when you've got at that time 6 kids and you're 2 of them are at practice and the other 4 have to sit in the van, and it just doesn't become fair. So that's not really funny. So I apologize. I don't have a super funny story, but it is interesting as we start to grow up a little bit and our kids start to get a little bit more involved that it's, it takes a lot of managing when you can't get everybody in one vehicle and you got a lot of different practices to be at. So
I think the solution is easy. It's just put a sidecar on a van and then you're fine. And one kid's just riding dirty.
Absolutely.
In a
sidecar. Or like one of those carriers on the top.
Or we just go 80s style and we're like, you're sitting on the floor.
Yes. Why don't you just get a station wagon?
Like a clown car. You're not going anywhere if we hit anything.
That's right.
Do they still make the Buick Roadmaster, the station wagon, the big station wagon?
I don't know. We did.
I don't know, man.
We have a station wagon. We got secondhand.
Awesome. I was going to say, I learned how to drive on an Oldsmobile station wagon that had a V8, and I'll never forget one of my mom's station wagons. And this is not a joke. Like one time she picked us up from St. Vincent Ferrer grade school in River Forest, Illinois. And there were 15 kids in the car, and I wish I was exaggerating, but sometimes you just had to pick up, like, first of all, my mom did daycare plus neighbor kids, plus my brother and I, there were 15 people in the car. Like, that's not an exaggeration. It was the late 80s, early 90s. And we were going like 4 blocks to the house, but I just will never forget the volume of people. And I think there were 6 or 7 in the way back. Yeah. And that's a reference that only people that had station wagons will fully understand. The way back.
When you're riding backwards, you're riding in the rumble seat.
Keep in mind, Tony, this is your experience on that one day in, you know, October or whatever. That's just us going to Applebee's now. Like, so that's like,
well,
every oh my gosh.
So is the mega van in play? I'm really intrigued.
Not yet. We're looking. We're looking. So
there's a couple mega vans at our school that our kids go to.
There are.
When I see those vans, I feel like I'm watching an episode of American Pickers when I see people file out of those things. Yeah, it's just like, fair. Where do you keep the drum set? All right, listen, we're going to get out of here.
Yeah.
And we want to thank our guest and resident movie critic, Ben Nitzel. You can go to discovermuscatine.com and find all of Ben Nitzel's movie reviews. Thank you for being here. Thank you for helping to decide that Cue Into the Storm is the winner of the April buffer battle, and I hope that you'll come back on in the future.
I feel
I would love to. It's a pleasure. I've enjoyed the renaissance of your podcast. It's a fun listen, and I appreciate you inviting me on. And yeah, like you said, you can check us out online, or else of course the paper still comes to your mailbox every Tuesday, generally on Tuesdays, and you will this coming Tuesday get the full review, the full skinny on Mortal Kombat. So
nice.
Perfect.
Nice.
Awesome. All right. Well, Joel and I will be back next Friday, new month, May, new episode of the Buffer Podcast. And Joel, we've got a lot of fun things in store for May. I don't want to give too much of it away, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yep. Baseball. We got some baseball movie talk, and we got a couple big guests lined up for that episode. So
Cal Ripken Jr.
Yeah, he'll be here. And
Billy. Marla Hooch.
Hooch. The best baseball card in the history of the world is the Billy Ripken baseball card where his teammates wrote an inappropriate message on the bottom of his bat.
Right.
He didn't realize it. But I played, yeah, I'm a big, yeah, we'll save those for May.
Perfect. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Buffer Podcast. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, including places like anchor.fm. Until next week, we'll see you in the Buffer soon.